Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. Hoo-wah! I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. You know, three Palestinian terrorists, including a Palestinian Authority police officer, carried out deadly terror attacks on the West Bank on February 29th, murdering two Israelis in the West Bank town of Eilat. The two victims, a 57-year-old father of three and a 16-year-old high school student, were sitting in a car at a gas station when they were ambushed by the terrorists. All three attackers were neutralized after the attack. While the current war against terrorism is going on in Gaza, Hamas is the terrorist group running the West Bank, and they have the same goal of killing all Jews. You know, it's hard to have a peace treaty with people who are totally committed to killing you. Okay, joining me at the 50 caliber microphone today is Marine vet Skip Coriel. How did you celebrate Leap Day, Skip?
Well, I celebrated Leap Day by just bemoaning the fact that there was an extra day in February. I don't like February. It's winter, and I want spring, and March is that transitional month. When here in Michigan, we go from February to March, but I love the spring, but it was agony for me, so I didn't really celebrate it. I have a bad attitude, Colonel. I'm sorry.
Push-ups will solve that, but it was a sunny day.
That's true. Push-ups will solve every problem in the military.
Well, it's true in the Army. I don't know about everybody. Okay, here's what we have for you today. On News and Comments by the Colonel, I'm going to discuss why none of the surrounding Arab Muslim nations will accept anyone from Gaza as a refugee. Then Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby will contribute his warrant wisdom. Next, Steve Wells, the CEO of the Friends of the Israeli Defense Force, will join us. And Steve Gorham will discuss the non-crisis of climate change. And veteran Teresa Robinson will discuss female veterans.
Hey, troops, please invite your friends to join us at this time on this great radio station. Then head on out to frontlinesoffreedom.com and sign up for our free e-newsletter. And join the conversation at facebook.com/frontlinesoffreedom.
We really do welcome your input to this show. Send us your ideas and comments through our website, frontlinesoffreedom.com, or by Facebook. And now it's time for news and comments by the Colonel on Frontlines of Freedom. We'll start with the news. What's first, Skip?
Well, Colonel, as we all know, both Donald Trump and Joe Biden both at the border a week or so ago, and a federal judge blocked Texas border security bill allowing state law enforcement to arrest and detain people who cross the Texas border illegally. And Texas immediately appealed the decision.
I think Texas has every right to protect itself from invasion, and it is being invaded due to President Biden's wildly open border. I hope Texas is able to protect itself and the rest of us until we close our border. This open border is going to cost our nation a great deal, not only in money, but safety, as many of these immigrants are obviously not interested in obeying our laws or honoring our culture.
And our Army will eliminate nearly 5% of its force, or about 24,000 posts, as the military begins a restructuring effort due to recruiting shortfalls. According to officials, the Army is significantly overstructured, and there aren't enough soldiers in its current ranks to fill existing units. The proposed cuts primarily represent empty posts, not actual soldiers, held over from wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. As part of the move, Army leaders say the service will pivot from a close combat counterinsurgency strategy to the larger-scale, multi-domain structure needed to fight the next major war.
Our military is truly having recruiting challenges. The woke stuff being forced on our troops, being allowed because of the poor leadership in our military, is, in my opinion, the major problem.
Hamas is prolonging the war in Gaza and calling for more bloodshed. The terror group has rejected the latest hostage deal terms agreed to by Israel and negotiated with the U.S., Egypt, and Qatar. Israel agreed to pause the fighting, send more aid into Gaza, and free hundreds of imprisoned Palestinian terrorists, but Hamas has so far refused to free the hostages. Notably, those leading the calls in Congress for an immediate ceasefire have failed to condemn Hamas. Representative Richie Torres further exposed how these members are quick to criticize Israel but fail to unequivocally condemn Hamas, and Representative Jared Moskowitz called out Hamas' sick strategy. While rejecting the deal, Hamas called on Arabs to storm the Al-Aqsa Mosque on Ramadan. In a televised speech last week, Hamas leader Ismail Haniya called on the residents of the West Bank and Jerusalem to barricade themselves inside the mosque and break the siege. Hundreds of thousands of Muslims pray on the Temple Mount complex each Ramadan. Hamas has previously used the holiday to ignite tensions and fuel attacks on Israel.
Those who protest Israel apparently think that taking civilian hostages is just fine. But it's never been fine. It's pure evil. Hamas, with the support of the Gaza people, started this war. So why is this not a big part of the news about the war?
And over a week ago, while helping to facilitate the transfer of humanitarian goods into Gaza, the Israeli military escorted trucks from the border crossing into the northern Gaza Strip. One morning, as a convoy of more than 30 trucks moved through the territory, thousands of Gazans rushed the trucks and caused a deadly stampede. According to the IDF, truck drivers, private contractors who were not Israeli, then tried to avoid the stampede and struck and killed additional people. About 100 members of the mob were injured or killed. The tragedy was compounded by a separate event in which a mob rushed the last aid truck in the convoy. The group started to move toward Israeli troops who were securing the corridor. Soldiers fired warning shots to try to disperse the threatening crowd. Fearing for their safety, the troops used live fire aiming at the legs of those who posed a threat and refused to move away. About 10 members of the mob were injured.
Well, of course, the terrorists and the liberal media falsely blamed all the injuries and deaths on Israel. I'm glad I wasn't one of the welfare truck drivers who sought to defend themselves. I'm not sure what I would have done. Oh, and by the way, America just dropped some food supplies by plane into Gaza. Why didn't Egypt or some other Arab country take care of those Arab people?
And Israel will provide Ukraine with an early warning system against missiles as part of an aid package for Kyiv, as it condemned aggression from Russia. Israel's ambassador to the United Nations told the General Assembly that his country had provided humanitarian aid to Ukraine since the start of Vladimir Putin's full-scale invasion because it was the moral thing to do.
Israel, a nation not near Russia and a nation at war with real terrorists, is and has been helping Ukraine more than some European nations. I'm proud of Israel, and I'm wondering when all the European nations will wake up and provide Ukraine all the help they need.
And a federal appeals court in Washington has ordered a new sentence for a retired Air Force officer who stormed the Capitol dressed in combat gear in a ruling that could impact dozens of other cases stemming from the January 6, 2021 event. While a panel of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit upheld Larry Brock's conviction, the court said a judge wrongly applied an enhancement that lengthened the recommended prison sentence range under federal guidelines. The enhancement, on the grounds that Brock's conduct resulted in substantial interference with the administration of justice, has been applied in over 100 other January 6 defendants' cases. If the ruling stands, those defendants who have not already completed their prison terms may push for new sentences. Prosecutors may appeal the ruling. Brock was sentenced last year to 2 years in prison after being convicted of a felony charge of obstruction of an official proceeding and misdemeanor offenses. He is currently serving his sentence at a federal lockup in Missouri and is expected to be released in December.
I'm glad there's starting to be some common sense and sense of justice applied to the January 6th event. It was neither an attack on anything or anyone. It was a protest. Yes, in some cases it was trespassing, but in other cases the police opened the doors so protesters could enter. And it was clearly not an attempt to overthrow the government, as some have suggested. This, I fear, is the government attacking people who disagree with them, as we are all allowed to do. And that's the news. As Americans, it's our responsibility to ensure that our nation is well-run and on the right path. Politics and politicians are confusing. We can work together. Concerned Veterans for America can assist you, even if you're not a vet, in getting involved in getting our nation back on track. Working with them is one of the things I do. Check cvafrontlines.com. That's cvafrontlines.com. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. Coming up on Frontlines of Freedom, I'll share comments by the Colonel, and we'll enjoy some warrant wisdom. Then we'll discuss Israel with Steve Wells. At ease, troops, take a break. Silver has increased 24% over the past 15 months and is a solid financial investment. Silver is projected to continue its rise and is nowhere near its 2011 high of $49 an ounce. So there's still a lot of room for investment growth. Call 800-UCB-GOLD or go to their website at universalcoin.com/Denny. That's universalcoin.com/Denny.
This is Marine Vet Skip Coriel with your home defense tip of the week. Most home invasions occur when people are at work between the hours of 10 a.m. and 3 p.m. Because of this, we highly recommend the installation of a home security video surveillance system. These systems are easy to install and cost only a few hundred dollars. They allow you to monitor your home while you're at work via your computer or cell phone. This is just one more way to keep your family safe. For more useful tips on home and personal defense, visit homedefenseshow.com.
HealthVet.net is a national help center helping the military community with all of your everyday needs. Whether you need a realtor, an attorney, health-related services, or information on retirement planning, financial resources, or more, our vast network of hand-picked qualified service providers are waiting to help you. With up-to-date military news and resources, you can find answers to all of your daily needs at HealthVet.net. HealthVet.net wants to thank you for your service, and may God continue to bless the U.S. of A.
Do you have a story inside you yearning to come out? As a self-published author, you are free to creatively distribute your book online or using your own professional connections. White Feather Press will publish your manuscript and set up online distribution, allowing the author to retain all copyright and distribution rights as well as all profits. Check out White Feather Press at publishyourdream.com. White Feather Press, reaffirming faith in God, family, and country.
This is Colonel Danny Gillum. It's 20 minutes after the hour, and you are in formation and listening to the Front Lines of Freedom all across America. Troops, even if our economy wasn't a mess with inflation going crazy and prices up out of sight, I'd still recommend that you do some investing in precious metals, gold and silver. I encourage you to join me in purchasing these solid investments from Universal Coin. Find them at universalcoin.com/Denny. That's universalcoin.com/Denny. Now it's time for comments by the Colonel. As I discussed last week, no Israeli army drove the people who were living in what is now Israel away. Many Jews already lived there. Jews migrated there from Europe in the 1930s and 40s to get away from persecution. Many bought the land they now live on from the people there. Yes, some of the people there knew that they weren't welcome and fled. Well, in the last 30 or so years, millions of Arab Muslims have migrated into Western Europe and were welcomed. That kind of migration has periodically happened all across the world for all of history. Why didn't the people we now call Palestinians, all of whom are Arab Muslims, migrate to the Arab Muslim nations that completely surround Israel and settle there? Why aren't they going to one of those nations now when there's a war in Gaza? The answer is they're not welcome in those countries, even as visitors. Israel is about to launch a ground operation on the city of Rafah on the Gaza-Egypt border. There are hundreds of thousands of Palestinian refugees there who have been there for 4 months. Israel may well expel those people from Gaza. So where might these people go? If that were to happen, they would have nowhere to go in the Arab Muslim world. This from former U.S. Ambassador Ryan Crocker. Despite the public support for Palestinian rights, in fact, nearly every Arab state has long viewed the Palestinians with, quote, fear and loathing, said Crocker. This is especially true of Egypt, which won't let any of them cross the border. For the record, Crocker spent nearly 40 years representing our interests in the Arab world, serving as U.S. ambassador to Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, Kuwait, Afghanistan, and Pakistan. Crocker warns us that the current conflict between Israel and Hamas and its potential resolution depends on understanding the history from the Arab side and the reluctance of other Arabs to come to the aid of Palestinians. Worthy of note in this current conflict is the lack of reaction or response from the Arab world. Saudi Arabia continues to hold the door open for a peace agreement with Israel. The UAE, Morocco, and Bahrain didn't even withdraw their ambassadors. Jordan did, but half their population is Palestinian. The Arab states simply don't care. While our government is pushing Israel to begin peace talks, which must include the creation of a separate Palestinian state, Israel's Netanyahu won't even consider that, and no Arab states are pushing for it. The people who now call themselves Palestinians are truly a people without a land or refuge anywhere. We've all seen the horror of Gaza, and the West Bank isn't much better. Over the years, Palestinian refugee camps in other Arab countries have not been supported by the host nations, and some of them were even attacked by the people of the host nation. During the Six-Day War in 1967, Arab leaders first recognized the Palestinian Liberation Organization, and the Arab nations lost that war against Israel, and the PLO emerged as the voice of the people who now call themselves Palestinians. And the reaction to that from the Arab nations? Fear and loathing. In 1970, the PLO attempted to overthrow the Jordanian monarchy. That failed because of both the professionalism of the Jordanian military and because Syria withheld the air support they'd promised the PLO. Yes, the PLO was active in Syria and really ignored the Syrian government and worked against them. The PLO was also active in Jordan and did a number of very anti-Jordan things. The public opinion of the majority of the people in most Arab nations supports the Palestinian cause, but this doesn't impact the governments. The governments see the attacks the various Palestinian groups do against anyone who they don't agree with. Arab governments, while divided on many things, do all agree that the Palestinians are a threat, a foreign population that should be weakened, if not exterminated. Indeed, you may have noticed that Egypt virtually exploded when our Secretary of State Blinken recently proposed Egypt give temporary sanctuary to Gazans. I believe that a big part of the gap is that for generations, the UN has been providing schools for all the refugees in Gaza and the West Bank. Hamas and Hezbollah run those schools, and they've been teaching those children at all ages that they must hate and kill all Jews. Virtually all the adults in those areas now grew up with that culture. If their culture says to kill those who you disagree with, perhaps that would apply to the governments of other Arab nations if they do things that don't seem right. Would you want such people in your nation? Oops, I forgot. We now have open borders and do have people like that all over the place. Anyway, I understand why the Arab nations might not want such folks in their countries. And maybe we should stop funding the UN. They don't seem to be doing much that is good for our nation. In conclusion, there's no clear solution to the Palestinian issue. The Palestinians have nothing to offer any nation that accepts them. All they know is hating Israel and supporting terrorists who want to kill Jews. There's no reason why Israel should accept a peace deal with a group of people who are dedicated to killing Jews. And I hope our nation doesn't decide that the only solution is to move all the Palestinians to Mexico so they can come across the border to our nation where we can take care of them. And those are my comments for today. This is Colonel Danny Gillum. You're listening to Frontlines of Freedom. Now we get to enjoy some warrant wisdom with Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. What do you have to share this week, Roland?
You know, Colonel, with more than 300 co-sponsors in the House and 71 in the Senate, it's surprising that the Major Richard Starr Act has yet become law. However, the inside story is that lawmakers are concerned with the bill's cost, which is estimated to be between $7 and $9 billion over the next decade. The bill is named after Major Richard Starr, a U.S. Army combat engineer who deployed multiple times to both Iraq and Afghanistan, where he cleared roads of IEDs. Major Starr was medically retired in 2018 after learning he had stage 4 lung cancer from burn pits exposure. This discovery was made after his early symptoms were dismissed by the doctors. Because Major Starr's medical retirement came before he reached 20 years of military service, he was not eligible to concurrently receive military retirement pay and VA disability compensation. Unfortunately, in February 2021, Major Starr lost his fight with cancer. He is survived by his wife, Tanya Starr, who is courageously seeking to keep her husband's memory alive through advocating for this legislation. Now, aside from the cost issue, there's a number of important reasons to understand why this bill should be passed. You see, since 1890, federal law has prevented veterans from concurrently receiving both military retired pay and veterans disability compensation. Retirement pay and disability compensation are two different payments for two different purposes. Now, Congress previously acknowledged this injustice in 2002 when it enacted an exemption to allow retirees who served at least 20 years and have a disability rating of at least 50% to concurrently receive both military pay and disability compensation. The Major Richard Starr Act coverage is limited to approximately 50,000 combat injured veterans, also referred to as Chapter 61 veterans or retirees. However, it's likely that some combat injured veterans covered by the proposed bill may prefer to retain their tax-free combat-related special compensation as opposed to receiving concurrent retirement and disability pay. Now, if you're interested in helping get this bill passed, you can go to the Reserve Officers Association Legislative Readiness Center, where you'll find an advocacy campaign where you can help to persuade Congress to enact the Major Richard Starr Act as part of the fiscal year 2025 National Defense Authorization Act. The easiest way is by sending the pre-authored message from the ROA website to your elected officials. The site makes this extremely easy to do. For Frontlines of Freedom, I'm Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. Back to you, Colonel.
Thanks, Roland. I always enjoy your comments. Straight ahead on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll discuss Israel with Steve Wells. Then we'll talk with Steve Gorham about climate. And Teresa Robinson will discuss female veterans. All this is coming up. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. You're standing tall with the Frontlines of Freedom. I'll be right back. Troops, it's time for some wind sprints. Do them for a couple of miles, then stand at ease.
Veterans swore an oath to defend this country, and that oath doesn't expire when we take off the uniform.
Concerned Veterans for America provides veterans and military families the opportunity to continue serving their country by taking on the most important issues our country is facing.
A better foreign policy, quality health care for veterans, responsible spending, and more.
Learn more about how you can play a part by visiting cvafrontlines.com. That's cvafrontlines.com.
Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to vetted veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code. Troops, welcome back to our nation's largest military veteran talk radio show, Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Troops, please do send me your comments and questions. Email me through frontlinesoffreedom.com. So it's an honor to welcome to the show Rabbi Steve Weil. Rabbi Weil is the CEO of Friends of the Israeli Defense Force, an organization I greatly admire. Welcome, Steve. Thanks for joining us.
It's an honor to be on this program. Really an honor to be with you, Dennis, and to be with all those who are listening and participating.
Steve, you're a rabbi in America. How did you elect to do that? Is it just something you, like all kids, you came up with something you wanted to be? What's the story behind it?
Well, our family were German Jewish refugees. We were in the cattle business in Germany for about 300 years in the same town about 35 kilometers from Würzburg. And when my grandfather, my father and grandmother fled Germany, when they got into America, they went into the same business that they'd done for 300 years. And we grew up upstate New York, had dairy farms, crop farms, and bought and sold livestock. And for university, I went to a place called Yeshiva University, where I could get a serious education, as well as a serious biblical and Talmudic education. And I loved the studies there. So as well as getting an MBA over at NYU for graduate school, simultaneously, I received a rabbinic degree from Yeshiva University.
Well, my mother is a German Jew, and her family immigrated. They came just before World War I, so we've got something in common. We'll have to figure that out at some point. Okay, talk about the FIDF, the Friends of the Israeli Defense Force. What is it? How do you get involved? What do they do? How do they do it?
Yeah, it's an organization that's about 42 years old. It was actually started by Holocaust survivors. And the role that we play, and if I could just contextualize it, when President Trump said to Angela Merkel and what he said to the French and the Italians, that it's not fair that the American taxpayer should be subsidizing first world wealthy nations, you have to do your fair share. We'll be there for NATO. We'll be there financially. We'll be there with troops, but only if you do your fair share. And what did he mean, your fair share? He was asking them to spend 2% of the GDP on military. And that number is the average number that most countries across the world spend. Israel, before this war that started, the atrocities October 7th that led to this war, Israel was spending 10.2% on military and security. It's a miracle of biblical proportions that Israel even survives. So the reason we exist is we fund the education, the welfare, the spirituality, the culture for the soldiers. Just to give you an example, there's 50,000 soldiers in the IDF that are coming from various degrees of poverty. We fund them, their families. We take care of the lone soldiers. We are the GI Bill, because Israel, how it survives economically, no one knows when you have that kind of a burden, that kind of a financial burden for the military and security. This year, it'll probably be closer to somewhere around 16 to 17%. And that's really why we exist. Now, that all changed on October 7th, because we went from being the GI Bill, funding high school education for those who didn't have a high school diploma, funding all kinds of these transformational educational programs, welfare programs. We ended up funding blood plasma, bulletproof ambulances. Remember the show MASH? You know, mobile units, mobile hospitals, EKGs, X-ray machines. We've just committed to the MOD over the last few weeks, $87 million to fund PTSD therapy for those who are still in the Army and those who are discharged. So what we're doing right now is a function of the stress of this war is very different than what we usually do over the course of the 42-year history of this organization.
So you are responding to the need, and the need may change, as it just did when this war began. But what you say makes sense. As long as I've been supportive of and around Israel, I've not thought about the fact that, yes, they do spend a huge percentage of their budget defending themselves, because they have to. There's no choice in the matter. And I never thought about how you fill the gap. So thank you for filling that answer. Keep going, please.
Yeah. When you think about Iran, who, if it wasn't for Israel and the IDF, they would have one of these hegemonic Shia caliphates that goes all the way from the Arabian Gulf, what they call the Persian Gulf, to the Mediterranean. And really the thorn in their side is Israel and the IDF. So what they've done is, through the IRGC, the Iranian Republican Guard Corps, they have spread the revolution by funding six of these proxies, you know, with the Houthis in Yemen, the Shia militia in Western Iraq and in Syria. The most dangerous by far and the most powerful is Hezbollah in Lebanon, Hamas in Palestinian Islamic Jihad that operate out of Gaza, and we know what they're capable of. And of course, the Hamas in Palestinian Islamic Jihad that works out of Judea and Samaria. So those six proxies, literally, you know, over the course of this war, have all been shooting rockets, have all been attempting to murder Jews, Christians, non-Muslims in these areas. And to such an extent that on October 7th, they butchered and slaughtered their fellow Muslims who were Israeli citizens.
Yes, that is a situation that we in America can barely understand. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're discussing the FIDF with Rabbi Will. We don't have to deal here with terrorism, at least I hope we don't. We don't know what we've led across our southern border, but we've not had to deal with literally everybody around you dislikes you, and somebody's funding multi-terrorist groups that want to kill you, and the UN has been funding education systems that teach kill Jews. That's a tough environment, and they better be tough to stand up for it, and they need help. So I hear you. Tell us more, Steve.
I mean, when we saw the kind of equipment that Hamas brought over, I'm talking about bombs. I'm talking about RPGs, thermobarometric bombs that can, when they torch those 21 young women in the base, they go up to 3,000 degrees Celsius. There was weapons that came from Iran, from North Korea, from Russia, and from China. They were smuggled through the Sinai Desert. And these smugglers, Bedouin smugglers, get paid a fortune of money to do that by Hamas. It's Iranian money. And then you have Egyptian soldiers. Not that it's coming from the Egyptian hierarchy, but they're not getting paid a lot of money, and they get bought off, and they allow that over what's called Rafah in Arabic, Rafiah in Hebrew, the border between Egypt and Gaza. And they're not a terrorist group. We used to call them a terrorist group. They're a military. Their military capabilities, I'm talking about Hamas, far surpass most countries. And I saw that with my own eyes, with the kind of equipment that just the terrorists who brought over on October 7th that was confiscated when they were taken out by the IDF.
You know, that's something that we need to think about. The fact that they act like terrorists, calling them terrorists, implies that they're sort of semi-professionals. And these folks are anything but semi-professionals, right?
Oh, you saw what there were 3,200 that crossed over on October 7th. The initial ones, about 350, they're called the Nukhba. That was their elite forces. There's a force in southern Lebanon known as the Radvan. That's the elite forces of the Hezbollah. These guys are battle-tested. They did the dirty work for Iran and Syria when they, you know, put down the Sunni Muslims. They happen to be Shia Muslims who hate Sunni Muslims, and they slaughtered 500,000 of them. There's 11 million Sunni Muslim refugees all over the world today. And this Radvan, who's on the northern border, they're even more dangerous. And what's even worse in terms of the northern border of Israel, I'm talking about the Hezbollah of Lebanon, who literally controls Lebanon. You and I could swear that they have 150,000 rockets, but the CIA, the Mossad, is much more confident that the number is somewhere around 180,000 to 200,000 rockets. And worse than that, they have, that we know of through the CIA and the Mossad, at least 2,000 precision-guided missiles. About 10 days ago, they struck the Northern Command Center of the IDF, and a young woman was killed, a 20-year-old soldier. That was a PGM. That was a precision-guided missile. You know, the Israel does have missile defense, what's called Iron Dome, that's to a great degree funded by our Congress. David Sling, which was a joint program between the United States military and the Israeli military. They have very good missile defense if it's warding off the 12,000 rockets that came out of Gaza over the course of this war. But if it's the PGMs and it's the close to 200,000 rockets coming from the north, Israel just doesn't have the capability to stop all those rockets.
How could they? There's more to discuss about Israel, and Steve is going to stay with us. This is Colonel Danny Gill on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's push-up time. I want you to do 103 push-ups. That's how many I do, well, sometimes. And then take a break and stay in the area. We'll be right back. When considering precious metals investments, credibility is paramount. That's why I chose Universal Coin and Bullion. They have a long-standing reputation in the industry that instills confidence in investors. Plus, the company's president, Dr. Mike Fulgens, is recognized as America's gold expert by his peers and the U.S. government, and was named Dealer of the Year by the American Numismatic Association. Call 800-UCB-GOLD or go to their website at universalcoin.com/Denny.
Friends, Adam here, Patriot Foods, U.S. only company. Frozen fruits and vegetables straight from our dirt, not overseas. Support the U.S. farmer. When you shop at patriotfoods.com, we give back to a military family in need. We got to take care of each other, my friends. We have to. So important. 10% off patriotfoods.com. 10% off, promo code FREEDOM, and shop today.
This is Colonel Denny Gill, and this is the final formation for this hour on Frontlines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation with Rabbi Steve Wills, the CEO of Friends of the Israeli Defense Force. Steve, you were talking about the different, what I call somewhat inaccurately, the terrorist groups, but the people who are militarily trying to bring terror to Israel. And they're coming from all directions, and they're well-trained, and they're amazingly well-recruited. And you talked about all those rockets. Yes, you can have anti-rocket artillery and stuff like that, and we do, and you do, but they're expensive, and there's a limit to how many you can have at any one time. That's got to be an issue.
That's a very significant issue. Right now, Israel has been fighting Hamas with two arms tied behind its back, and that's why you have such a small percentage of civilian casualties. You know, I'll just give you an example. Think about the British conquest of Fallujah and Persian Gulf too, our conquest of Mosul, you know, of some Balad, some of those cities in Iraq. There was a huge number of civilian casualties. You're looking at 5-1, 4-1 was the ratio, because you're dealing with asymmetric warfare. The enemy is dressed in civilian clothing. They work out of UNRWA schools. They work out of mosques. They work out of Red Crescent ambulances, out of hospitals, and they're dressed like civilians. Israel, in the previous battles with Hamas, in 2012, it was a 2-1 ratio. In 2014, 70 days in the summer 2014, it was a 1-1 ratio. The last battle in May of 21 was called Guardians of the Wall. It was 0.7 civilians for every one Hamas terrorist that was taken out and eliminated. And those numbers literally are off the bell curve. This battle, which is the most brutal urban warfare, you know, you think about, they've got 600 kilometers of tunnels, you know, where they're coming in and out of those tunnels all the time. They've got thousands of entrances to those tunnels. Every other building is booby-trapped. I've seen bombs that were put into children's dolls. It's just an incredible, incredible minefield there. And in that battle, if you take and I call them lies because Hamas claims that 29,000 have been killed. Every battle that they've had with Hamas, Hamas has way inflated those numbers. But even if you take those numbers, the ratio was like 1.3 civilians. And again, those are false, lying numbers. 1.3 civilians to every one combatant. The morality of the IDF and the morality that's instilled in these soldiers is incredible to such an extent that it's cost many soldiers' lives in this battle.
Yes, sir. You know, when they talk about civilians in Gaza, as I understand it, the Gaza people basically were happy with Hamas. They may or may not have been members of Hamas, but in World War II, when the United States attacked Japan, civilians died. We didn't aim for them, but we knew they were being hit by bomb. That happened in Germany. Why should it be a surprise that it's happening now? The people that are supporting the people that are killing are as much a part of the enemy as anyone else, aren't they?
Colonel Gillum, you hit it right on the head. And that is the Muslim Brotherhood, which has been expelled from the Emirates, expelled from Saudi Arabia, is illegal in Egypt, that if anyone is caught being a member of the Muslim Brotherhood, they're immediately arrested and incarcerated in Egypt, which is why Egypt does not want any of these people. They're a threat to Islam. Now, the theology of the Muslim Brotherhood is, it's called Islamism. There's zero tolerance for a Jew or a Christian, an infidel, controlling any land that they deem as Muslim land. It's intolerable, theologically, ideologically. So what happens? In Gaza, we're not sure, it's somewhere between 2.2 and 2.3 million people living in Gaza. But we know that at least 1.1 million, they claim proudly they're members of the Muslim Brotherhood. That's their theology. So, you know, Hamas and PIJ may have 40,000 armed murderers, armed terrorists, but you've got a population of at least 50% that ideologically and theologically supports what they're doing.
And therefore, Hamas truly is a part of Gaza, and Gaza truly is a part of Hamas because the people support them. If nothing else, they don't oppose them. And I would suspect that when the Hamas reports killing some Jews, the people in Gaza rejoice. That sounds to me like an enemy country that can legitimately be attacked. Again, you don't try to kill civilians, but you know it happens. And my gosh, what a horrible situation. That I'm amazed that the Israeli military is doing such an honorable job of trying hard to just get the enemy. And my gosh, they're being accused of all kinds of things, which make no sense at all if you realize what a war is.
A friend of mine, Major General Nadav Padan, he's a retired Israeli general. He took a group of American generals who fought in Iraq and Afghanistan and a group of British generals and colonels who fought in Iraq and Afghanistan. He took them through Khan Yunis, Gaza City, the Jabalia refugee camp, Beit Hanun. These are major areas of battle since October 7th. And he showed them the methodology, what happened, how they moved the civilian population, gave them 3-4 weeks notice before coming in. And they were just astounded at the morality, astounded at the success when you're dealing with, in a very, very dense, small, concentrated area, 600 kilometers of tunnels, you know, where they can pop out at any building at any moment. They were just astounded at the success the IDF has had. As bad as the failures were of not having brigades on the Gaza border on October 7th, which is what allowed the atrocities to take place, which was a huge, huge mistake and a huge failing. Just the opposite has happened since October 7th.
Yes, sir. Again, yes, I am a great admirer of and love of Israel. And yes, I admire the IDF. But it's not that tells me that they are incredibly effective in doing the things right and not trying to kill people that are not targets.
One of the guests who comes to West Point every spring semester, and it comes to Colorado Springs every spring semester, is Brigadier General. His name is Bensi Gruber. And he has a background in the ethics of war, and he gives scenarios and shows videos to the graduating cadets of each institution. He's an invited guest every year. He describes to them the ethics of war, the code of war that every commander is trained in and trains his soldiers or her soldiers in, and how it's deployed and how it's utilized. And he shares this with them. It's an incredibly moral army. And there's, if you know, for the rare exception of a soldier getting out of line and doing something which is viewed as a violation of that code of ethics, the consequences are very, very severe.
Well, everybody makes mistakes. Even good people do dumb things on occasion. And having spent 2 years in combat you respond a bit differently than anything in the classroom can ever tell you. But yes, sir, I agree with what you said.
Colonel Gillum, I'm glad you brought that up. One of the sad things of this war is that so far in the ground campaign, and it was true on October 7th, but in the ground campaign where we have very clear statistics, 22% of the 240 soldiers who have died in this ground campaign have died as a function of friendly fire. And when you're dealing in such intense, close urban areas, you know, there are a lot of people that have been killed as a function of friendly fire. And you can just imagine what that does to the PTSD of, you know, of those who made those fatal mistakes.
Indeed. Rabbi, we're a little bit out of time. Wrap up your final thoughts and tell us a bit more about the FIDF and how listeners who want to can plug in, get involved, help.
We need your help. For this emergency campaign that started October 8th, the day after the war, 100%, there is zero overhead on the emergency campaign. The requests that we get from the Ministry of Defense and from the Israel Defense Forces, each, I would say they were happening 2-3 times a day. At this point, they're happening 3-4 times a week. They're huge. I mean, it's costing us a few million dollars a week. And we've got Christians and Jews all over America supporting us. Whatever someone can afford to give, the emergency campaign 100% is going to the needs of the Army. FIDF.org, F like friends of the IDF, FIDF.org is our website. Feel free to go to the website. And one last comment I want to make, and I thank everyone participating in this incredible, incredible station. Your program, Colonel Gillum, is an incredible program. You have to understand, this war is not about Israel and Hamas. This is Iran trying to create a Shia hegemonic caliphate. Israel standing in the way of them conquering Mecca and Medina. They want to control the holy sites of Islam. It's about them conquering the oil fields in Saudi Arabia, the natural gas reserves in the Emirates. That's what this is about. And ultimately, and I've heard now the Supreme Ayatollah from Iran say this, Khamenei has said this 8 times in the last year, the great Satan. The ultimate goal is the great Satan. When he says the great Satan, he doesn't just mean America. We as Americans are the poster child of the great Satan. He means Christian Europe. He means Western civilization. That's their ultimate goal. The problem is they've got the IDF. They've got Israel, that little Jewish country standing in their way as a thorn in their side. Till they can get rid of Israel, they can't conquer the Saudi Arabian oil fields or holy sites. Till they get rid of that, they can't conquer Western civilization and Christian Europe. But that's the ultimate goal. And they say it. They don't hide that.
Rabbi, you're 100% right. I was a Mideast war planner for a number of years. So I stay in touch with those kind of things. And yes, sir, you're right. Steve, thank you. Thank you for the comments you shared, the insights you shared, for your service to our nation and for your service to Israel, who I believe is the strongest ally America has ever had. Thank you for joining us today.
God bless you, Colonel Gillum, and really God bless our military, the military of the United States of America, which is defending humanity.
This concludes the first hour of the show. We'll start the second hour talking with Steve Gorham about how climate change is no threat to anyone. Then Teresa Robinson will have another female veteran guest. Of course, we'll conclude with our weekly mailbag, military history, and our self-defense report. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom Troops. It's time for pull-ups. Do 40 good ones, maybe about 20 more push-ups, and grab some protein, rehydrate with water. And finally, put a big smile on your proud-to-be-an-American face and send me your thoughts by email or on Facebook.